On the Wintrust Business Lunch, we welcome Tom Gimbel, frequently to the show, the CEO and founder of LaSalle Network. Welcome back, Tom. You're good?
Always good to be with you, John. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Invest in Veterans Week starts today, right?
Yes. And, you know, I think if we look at this situation, we started, as you know, LaSalle Veteran Network last year to help 1,000 veterans and to continue to do that. And I think when you look at what's going on, obviously it's not American veterans, but you look at what's going on in the Ukraine and Russia. You think about people's, you know, all the praise that people are giving, and rightfully so, for the Ukrainian citizens for the fighting back. And then you think that our veterans do this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, obviously not in the guise of an invasion, but of defending and doing things to create our freedom. And that we don't do more as a society to help our veterans assimilate back into the professional job ranks is beyond me. And it's just our little thing to help. And I think we all need to look at how we can help veterans and give them a step up in their transition into civilian life.
You and I have talked about this before and your company's continued support of that idea. So if I'm an employer, I mean, so I know you have tips or ideas about this. Are you speaking about employers or employees?
Well, really, really both. I think the employees, it's twofold. So the employers, I think if you really want to make a concerted effort to hire veterans, it can't be one or two, because the odds of success aren't that much different than hiring a regular individual, right? Some are going to make it, some are not. Some are going to fit into your culture, some won't. And so you've got to continually do it. But once you bring somebody in, you've got to realize that their training was completely different. They, you know, to quote Colonel Jessup from A Few Good Men, right? They follow orders or people die. And when we're in the office environment, right, we can't get people to show up to work in the office. I mean, there's two really different mentalities here. And so you've got to go through this situation and say, how are we going to assimilate these folks that were trained in basic training and then spent their 5 years in the military, and how we assimilate them? So that's the employer side, and to continually reinvest in trying to find more of these folks. On the employee side, you need to educate your staff that you're bringing somebody in from the military that may not have the relevant corporate experience and what their strengths are, and focus on people's strengths, not their weaknesses.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. I mean, do people tend to segue from their military career into the private career using the same sorts of skills? If I was in intelligence or operations, maybe I'll go work for a big company and the IT side or something like that. You know what I mean? Or do they sometimes pivot completely?
Well, a lot of times they don't know where to go to get the jobs, and the employers don't know where to go to find them. And so you get people that have some IT experience, but they aren't working on the same, you know, they're not using Salesforce in the military, right? So you've got these different types of issues that are the skills transferable? Do companies want to pay for that type of skill set if they don't have the exact experience? Now, in a low unemployment situation like now, it's really great to give these folks a chance. But when you bring people out and they don't know what to do, that's where you get them taking minimum wage jobs and they feel like failures because they have all this experience of running really expensive equipment or having a lot of responsibility. And now they're in a situation where they can't be trusted above minimum wage. And it's that education process of what the skills are that are transferable.
Tom Gimbel is the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network. Can you give me a scenario? Walk me through, like, because somebody could be in the military for 20 years, as my dad was, or they could be in there for 2 years. So what's the typical kind of case you're talking about, or at least a common example?
Well, you get somebody who's an enlisted person, right? They're not an officer. They don't have a college degree. And when they get out, whether they're using the GI Bill or not, maybe they don't finish college. So you have somebody who spent 4 or 5 years in the military. They didn't graduate college. They may not be the best communicator in the world from their how they speak English. And not saying English is a second language. They just didn't go to college and refine it and aren't an English major. And then you get a situation in this where you look at it and they don't know how to interview. Their resume reads like a military profile sheet, not a resume making the transition, and they don't know how to explain what they want. I'd say that is the most common situation you get, and they were a basic infantry person, so their skill sets aren't that unique. But what do they have that's transferable? Number one, they have a work ethic. Number two, they follow orders. Number three, they've been trained to do something, so they have the ability to learn, right? And those things get lost. And employers would rather go and pay $50,000 for somebody who graduated out of U of I with a degree in liberal arts than to spend $50,000 on a soldier who spent the past 5 years being part of a team. And I think that's what we're trying to mend this situation and get an equal playing field.
I'm rewriting in my head a resume for that infantry man or woman you described. And maybe the skills that they've learned in the field or whatever they did in their career, and sort of comparing it to what would be required in the workplace. And it takes a little wordsmithing, but I think I take your point that a lot of these skills are translatable, but they sure have never had to translate them, have they?
No, and if you look at it, you know, you look at resumes of kids graduating from college, young adults graduating from college, and what are they going to put? I was in a fraternity or sorority. I was rush chairperson, and then I was president of the Greek organization. I served on the board of the Panhellenic, whatever it is, of the Greek philanthropy thing. And people look at that and go, oh, those are real leadership qualities, and you went through. Okay, and I'm not saying they're not, and we hire a ton of people like that. However, if you're looking at somebody who enlisted in the military when they were 18 years old, they moved away to a foreign place. They went through basic training and got the crap beat out of them. Then they go and they have to be part of a unit that's doing these exercises. And if they were leaders in that capacity, even without a college degree, that's a transferable skill as much as those other things are. The question is, will the companies invest in training and development to help refine their skills or let them go back to school at night or do certain things that will help these people grow and develop? And to me, that's where we're missing the boat as a society in helping the veterans transition back into the civilian workforce.
Today marks the start of Invest in Veterans Week, something Tom Gimbel's been doing for a while. Founder and CEO at LaSalle Network, thelasallenetwork.com. Okay, Tom, good job. We'll talk again.
Thanks, John. Stay healthy.
You probably have heard of former Obama Education Secretary Arnie Duncan. Says he is not going to be running for mayor of Chicago against Lori Lightfoot. Some folks thought he would. He says, I'm exactly where I need to be, doing the work I love. I've never been part of a more courageous and committed team. He is part of a team at Chicago CRED, C-R-E-D, which says they work with community leaders, like-minded organizations, and hundreds of young men and women to radically reduce gun violence and bring hope back to Chicago. CRED is an acronym. I don't remember what it stands for, but Chicago something or another, I suppose, or crime reduction. Anyway, Arnie Duncan's not going to be running for mayor of Chicago. Are you paying attention, Lori Lightfoot? It's 12:23. Steve Alexander, what's the market at now?
Well, let me get the latest numbers for you, John. Dow's down 678, down 2% even. S&P's down about 70, 1.5%. NASDAQ's down 185, that's about 1.3%. And volatility, as we measure it through the VIX at the CBOE, is the highest it's been in quite some time. It's at 33.85. That's up about 12%. But, you know, keep in mind, John, the U.S. economy is in very good shape. There are more jobs than there are people to fill the jobs. Things are trucking right along. The glaring exception to that is inflation. And that's part of what's going on Wall Street today, as traders are keeping an eye on the effect of the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the potential threat to the economic recovery, the global economic recovery. And as oil prices go up, that kind of drags everything else along with it. Crude oil, Texas T, that's the West Texas Intermediate, broke $106 a barrel earlier today.
Wow.
The highest it's been since 2008. It's backed off a little bit now. It's $104.45. Some of that may be because the International Energy Agency announced within the past hour that the U.S. and other world powers are going to release about 60 million barrels of crude oil from their reserves. So that'll help out that a little bit, but it hasn't had a lot of effect, just down about a dollar or so. I was thinking about, you know, the crude oil and gasoline prices going up. I think you had Patrick Dahan say something to the effect that in adjusted for inflation, we're still paying about a dollar less more than we were in
2000 eight or four?
Sometime within the last decade, I believe. And that made me think of 1973. You may not be old enough to remember this, but the Arab oil embargo. Does that ring a bell for you at all?
Yeah, it sure does.
Yeah. 1973, the Arab-Israeli war was going on, and the Arab countries were angry at the U.S. President Richard Nixon was in charge then for basically siding with the Israelis. So they imposed an embargo on oil being sold to the United States. Well, we weren't a big oil producer at that time. Since then, we are, in fact, in the last couple of years, we have become a net exporter of crude oil and refined crude oil products, meaning we export more than we import. But back then, we weren't. So we had to go to, we had, remember, even and odd gas days based on the last number of your license plate?
Wow.
Where you couldn't fill up with gas. A lot of stations were out of gas. There were long lines. People would wait hours and hours in line to get gasoline on the odd or even days that they were allowed to do that. That's when the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit went into effect in the United States as a result of the science dictating that it was going to save a lot of fuel, a lot of gasoline, if we just drove slower. So certainly a different time in the United States back then.
One last thing. Do you think that if the war in Ukraine were not happening, would we be seeing these same markets we're looking at today? Maybe not the same, but is this more interest rates or is this more Ukraine?
No, it's more Ukraine because of if we lose Russian oil, that's 10 to 12% of the world's oil supply. I don't see how Putin can pay. He can survive if he doesn't sell his oil. Yeah. But if that goes away, that, you know, that's why oil is spiking, the potential for loss of some of the supply, while demand continues to be quite high. And the other thing to keep in mind is that I don't know if Putin is going to try to bring Ukraine to its knees, because planting season starts soon for Ukraine, which is known as the breadbasket of Europe. And if the farmers can't get their crops in, that's going to be a huge problem for that part of the world.
Steve Alexander follows markets and other agribusiness news for us, including the business of food. We'll get to that in a little bit. Speaking of Ukraine and vodka and Russia, Raquel Graham joins us, the CEO of Rock Innovation. Rockinnovation.com is the website. There's a dash between Rock and Innovation, and you spell Rock, R-O-Q. Innovation.com, which many of you already know because you may well have already purchased some of her products. And she joins us now on WGN Radio. Raquel, thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
No, you're a crazy chicken, according to Shark Tank.
I guess so, huh?
You know, when they said that to you on the show, that was supposed to be a compliment, and I guess you took it as such, but it doesn't make any sense. I don't even know what that means. Do you?
I absolutely do not, because that certainly does not describe me.
Well,
I am a very determined, very confident businesswoman is what I am.
Let's talk about your business. You're the first black-owned and female-led company from Chicago to win on Shark Tank. You made
kind
of scarf for your kids because they didn't want to wear scarves. Is that right?
That's right. They were younger, and this happened during the polar vortex. And if you remember, you could not even stick your hand outside of your window without getting frostbite. And my young ones put up such a fight every morning. I figured no one else in the world is going through this problem. So I thought I could just find a solution online, and there wasn't anything that a kid would wear for sure, not a, you know, turtleneck or anything they have to pull over their head. And their complaint was that the scarves were bulky and itchy. So I came up with an alternative patented closure that they loved, and I took it to market, and it sold out right away.
Did it get on Oprah's list? Is that the product at first? Because I know you've been on there a couple of times. Did that get on Oprah's list?
It was Headlights that got on Oprah's list.
Yeah. We can talk about that in
next
a minute.
Next was on Good Morning America. And The View.
Oh, so yes. So it did get some exposure, and everybody loved your story, and they also loved the product.
Absolutely. And also, my very first account was a Chicago account at Follett. And so I ended up on the top 40 NCAA college campuses. That was my first account for Next.
Follett,
the, which is quite a feat. Company.
Yeah, right. So, well, that's that's a score. But describe for me, because, by the way, we have the headlamp hats at my house. You're probably profitable because my wife bought like dozens of them
and gave
them out as gifts. Yeah, you know, and
people buy them like that because there's so many uses.
Well,
so I created it because I'm a runner, right? And I wanted it for recreational purposes, but there's a whole safety angle to it. If you see me on TV, I have a lot of B-roll. I show a man working on his car under the hood, having it a spare one in the car for changing your tire at the side of the road. There's so many, having kids wear them as they walk, you know, back and forth to the school bus or to school, just to have that extra safety, you know, have extra safety so that people can see them walking. You know, it has so many uses. Oh, and my dog walkers. I can't forget them.
Yeah.
They actually are, the biggest segment of buyers.
Tell me about it. So, and if you're not familiar with that, it's a knit cap, and woven into the front flap, if you will, is this LED light that's really bright, really thin, so it's not sticking out like a flashlight. But when you push it, the light's on. If you push it again, the light's off. It's very functional, but it's also kind of fashionable, very fashionable. It's hip. My niece likes it, for crying out loud.
Right.
And that's saying something.
It's wearable tech. And don't forget that the light is removable, which then makes the hat washable. And that's part of the secret sauce of the hat, because there are other hats that have lights out there, but they're wired, so you can't remove the light. So that's what makes it special as well. You just pop the light out and you put it in the washing machine.
But if there's other products like that out there, how did you think that you could make an entree into that field? Was it already crowded?
No, it wasn't. I mean, I'm going into, this will be 6 years with the hat. And one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is, so I sell on Home Shopping Network and QVC.
Yeah.
And our products require extensive testing, way more testing than is required in a retail store, because we're actually convincing you. So we have to be very careful about what we say. And so we test so much. And that is a big differentiator than other products that are similar on the market. So I actually have to provide light sometimes to people who didn't buy it from me, because the product is just not as good.
Hmm.
And that is our standard at Rock Innovation. We make products that are, first of all, to make your life easier, but we also make them functional and fashionable. So you don't have to walk around looking like you're wearing a headlamp.
So
we want you to look good, too.
We're talking about headlights with a Z at the end, and then before that, the Next, NEKZ, that line of scarves that your kids wear, that a lot of people wear, and then you've got the headlamp hats. Is there anything else coming down the pipe for you? What else are you working on?
Oh, absolutely. I have over 40 products in my book that I can produce at any time. So the next two, there's an extension now. A new headband is coming out that is for all seasons, because we have so much demand. So if you live in Florida now, this one coming out, it's going to be adjustable, padded. It's really well done. And then I'm going to be launching in kitchen and personal care this year.
What kind of products does that mean?
Well, they're kind of proprietary, but one is a peeler that catches all the peels.
A peeler with a headlamp.
No, no.
What a great idea. You should put lights on everything. How about that, Raquel?
And then lights on everything. Well, we are expanding more lights, too, because I tell you, people just love lighted products. They just do.
Do you imagine yourself as the next Martha Stewart or somebody like that who has a brand and a whole bunch of
absolutely
lifestyle?
Sarah Blakely. Sarah Blakely all day, the CEO and founder of Spanx. That is who I aspire to be.
Hmm.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. You're from Brooklyn originally and then moved to Chicago, right?
That's right. That's right.
And
born and raised.
And we're in the publishing business. You were on the marketing arm over at Johnson, right?
That's right. Yes, I was the head of all marketing for Johnson Publishing, Ebony Magazine, and I did that for 8 years before, well, actually, while I was there, I also went to Kellogg.
The business school at Northwestern.
Yeah.
And so did you always have this itch, like, great job, great career, but you did you always think, I want to break out and do my own thing? Did you imagine you would be where you are today?
Well, I've always been entrepreneurial, but to be honest, how I ended really starting the company, I started because of my kids, and that really came about. Before I went to business school, I had been trying to get pregnant for 2 years and couldn't. Decided to go to business school to get my degree and go the corporate route. And I had already had one child. And month one at Kellogg, there I was, pregnant. So I worked full time, went to school full time, and I was building a house at the same time. So in 18 months, I had a new baby, a new house, a new degree, and a whole new goal. I wanted a new career where I could spend more time with my kids. And that really is the beginning of, you know, me trying to figure out what entrepreneurial journey I would be on. And Polar Vortex hit. Next is a success. And here I am almost 8 years later.
Hmm. So one last question, then we'll let you go. And maybe
sure.
We'll catch up with you down the road. But how many people do you employ? Are they products made in Chicago? Has supply? Just talk to me briefly about the production and the location.
Sure. I originally started my production here in Irving Park. And once I got onto HSN, then I scaled to China, which is incredibly challenging now. I've been successful. The supply chain, it did not impact me much, except for costs. So getting my product here was ridiculously expensive, just like everybody else. But I was successful in doing it. I didn't have any... you know, some of the nightmare scenarios that we're seeing on the news.
Yeah.
I've managed to get all of, especially I had to rush to get my stuff here for Oprah's Favorite Things this year. So I was successful there.
A friend of mine has stuff on a boat somewhere outside the harbor in Los Angeles still. He's a businessman.
That's right.
His product is still floating in the ocean somewhere.
Yes.
Can you imagine how frustrating that is?
Well, just today I heard that there is a whole boat of cars that was on fire yesterday, and now it's sunk today.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Listen to you.
Oh, yeah, I can't complain.
Yeah.
I cannot complain.
No kidding. Continued success. Anything else before I let you go then, Raquel, that we need to know or announce for Rock Innovation?
Just look for more big things to come, and I'm really proud to have made history in Chicago, to be, you know, that first Black woman, Black-owned business to win on Shark Tank, and I'm really proud to hold that title, and I hope many more follow me.
We'll be in touch. Congratulations, and thank you,
Raquel. Thank you.
My wife likes to give gifts. Like, everybody gets socks, or one year all the girls got purses, and I think this year one of the things that Brenda bought a lot of were those hats with the little light on front, and they are fan-flipping-tastic. When you go to take the garbage out, when you're doing your work in the yard, when you're walking the dog, when you're going for a jog, if you just want to rock a good look, those headlights are really nice. Okay, so 12:45 on WGN. More business news now, and this is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. United Airlines is offering a $10,000 bonus for new part-time workers in Chicago. The bonuses will be paid to new ramp agents, baggage handlers, cargo loaders, and others. United says it's looking for roughly 250 people that staff the runways. United hopes to solve a nationwide worker shortage in many of the part-time roles. Southwest is also increasing incentives by raising starting pay to $18 an hour. The parent company of Jewel Osco, Albertsons, is launching a study to look for strategic alternatives to boost growth. Bloomberg says the review will examine various balance sheet optimization and capital return strategies. The review could lead to a possible sale of some Albertsons chains, including Acme, Tom Thumb, and Shaw's. Unloading some of its brands would enable Albertsons to raise cash to help it better compete with Walmart, Target, and Amazon, look for possible investments in digital offerings and delivery services. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now with the business of vodka, here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. We were talking about inflation earlier in the hour, mainly driven by oil prices, and oil prices are spiking today, over $100 per barrel now. And that impacts everything, farming and food. And at the Chicago Board of Trade, wheat is up the limit again today, 50 cents at 9.84, highest it's been since 2008. Soybeans are up 44 cents, that is, at 1680, and corn is up 35 cents. That's about 5% today alone at 7.25 and a quarter. But let's talk about vodka, which comes from grain, by the way. And let's call on a former Oak Park resident to help us out here.
Double vodka, and I want it now.
The late Betty White, an admitted fan of vodka, on Hot in Cleveland. Vodka's in the news because some people protesting Russia's invasion of Ukraine are dumping and boycotting it. Russian-sounding brands like Stoli and Smirnoff, for example. But wait a minute.
Dumping vodka made in Plainfield, Illinois really kind of misses the point.
Brett Pontani knows about vodka.
I am the specialty spirits buyer for Binney's Beverage Depot.
And that Russian-sounding Smirnoff brand?
Smirnoff is made in good old Plainfield, Illinois.
Yeah, there's a Diageo facility in Plainfield that brings in food-grade ethanol from ADM and elsewhere.
They take bulk alcohol and clean it up and turn it into things.
Like vodka. This isn't the first time vodka's been under attack. Just before the 2014 Sochi Olympics, when Russia made homosexuality illegal, gay and lesbian bars in Boys Town and Andersonville responded.
They were throwing everything out, including Stoli. And Stoli's like, no, wait. Because Stoli's made in Latvia, not even a Russian brand.
Okay, but what about Absolut?
Absolut is Sweden. It's actually manufactured by the Swedish government. Svedka is Swedish as well.
How about Kettle?
Kettle is Holland. Belvedere is Polish. Luksusowa is a potato vodka from Poland. Ciroc is France. Sky is California.
He really is the answer man when it comes to the types of vodka Binney's carries. And it carries, or has carried, nearly all of them. But there just aren't that many owned by Russian companies. And they're not the big sellers. And how does he feel about boycotting a brand as a form of protest?
They're not physical, right? You're not punching each other or shooting each other. You're making an economic statement.
But you probably want to make sure it's actually a Russian vodka. For example, Zier.
Which is produced in Russia.
But
it's an American company.
Brett Pontani of Binney's. From the farm to your belly, well, of course, it's National Punchki Day, but it's also National Peanut Butter Lovers Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth has a lot to tell you about. Hi, Amy.
Hi, John. How's it going today?
Pretty good. Where do you want to start today?
Well, I suppose we should start with the recall. So Abbott Laboratories has issued a recall for some Similac infant formula. It's the PM6040 cans and cases, all that was produced at a Michigan facility. Now, if you remember, just about a week or two ago, we talked about a bacterial infection that some infants were getting who consumed these same products. But now that has escalated a bit because we have seen an infant who died, and some of the bacterial infections still not totally conclusive, but two of the infants involved in those have also died. So if any listeners have Similac formula and they're curious about this, they can go to, there's a website for it. It's SimilacRecall.com, and they'll guide you through the whole thing, tell you all about it, give you the lot numbers. You can look at the bottom of your canister and see if it's affected, if it was produced in this Michigan facility, even check the lot number and learn some next steps.
You're also watching what Steve Wozniak's latest venture is. What's that?
That's right. So lots of things happening on Earth, but also lots of things happening just above the Earth. And that is, so Steve Wozniak, his new venture is called Privateer, and its mission is, well, it's going to keep track of space junk. And that's the term they keep using is just space junk. And essentially, you know, as satellites maybe bump into each other, as astronauts do projects, little pieces of metals and all kind of things are just sort of floating around in Earth's orbit. But they pose a pretty serious risk to communication satellites, things like that, if they collide. So what Steve Wozniak's new venture is doing is they're launching this, the ability to track all of the space junk and then start putting that data to use of to try to combat it a little bit. And so he's got two partners with this, one of whom is a PhD, an orbital mechanics professor who's done a lot of work at the University of Texas. He's appeared at congressional hearings. He's really been an advocate for keeping tabs and working to combat the things floating around in space. But, you know, they, as in talking to CNN Business in an interview, I thought it was interesting. They were very, very clear that they were not about the billionaires in space kind of track. They're like, we're not building fancy rockets. We're not doing any of that. We're looking at data. This is a pretty nerdy endeavor. They're not really going to do anything flashy. They feel like this is a really important cause and they want to put their effort behind it.
EpiPen's in the news. What's the latest on that?
That's right. So as you may recall, a few years ago, the price of an EpiPen, it went from about $100 to about $600 for a pair of them. And that fueled a huge debate around rising drug costs and things like that. So it also triggered some legal action. Part of that legal action was dismissed, and it really came down to a patent litigation settlement with a generic drug maker who wanted to make a cheaper alternative for people. So that was set to go to trial this month. And the drug maker, Viatris, which is formerly known as Mylan, said yesterday that they have agreed to pay $264 million to resolve that class action lawsuit. So that could have, had it gone to trial, plaintiffs were looking for about $1 billion in damages. And under some state antitrust laws, that could have multiplied pretty significantly. So they're paying the $264 million, and that is resolving that litigation.
Wonder how people are going to get that.
Yeah, I'm sure if you're part of that class action suit, I'm sure you will be notified by that. But I thought it was really interesting about what part of it was dismissed. There was a U.S. district judge in Kansas City last year that you know, dismissing a big part of that and really kind of honing it in on this antitrust case about this generic drug maker and taking away a lot of other claims. So it made it considerably smaller, but still, as a smaller case, it's still, you know, they were seeking $1 billion. So that's still a pretty large case.
Yeah, no kidding. It was part of a class action suit. And I got a check the other day and I had no idea why it arrived. And it was like a couple hundred dollars. I went, I'll take a couple hundred dollars. What happened?
What did I do?
Whoever wronged me, thank you. I didn't feel wronged, but I got a couple hundred bucks in the mail and I immediately spent it. Okay. Well, nice to talk to you. We'll visit again later in the week. Thank you, Amy Guth.
Thanks so much, John.